Thanks, Dan, for the fullest 13 seconds. Next up, we have Bill Hillman, who will be accompanied by a couple people, I believe. Bill Hillman is working on his first novel, The Last White Hood. Excerpts have appeared on London's famed radio station, Renaissance FM, Read Against the Recession, and Read Against the Recession, Hell at the Metro, as well as in Covey Blues and Anthology. His poetry has appeared in Make. He is a Golden Gloves champ and founder and host of the Windy City Story Slam.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Hey, let's get a big round of applause for Sarah and Make Magazine. Give a big round of applause. Okay, so I've been getting a lot of gigs lately, all kind of stuff. But the one I'm most excited about happened this morning. It was my 10-year-old niece. They invited me to her class to do a little story session and have a little fun with the kids. And so we go in there and I tell a little story and we start doing a thing where I was throwing this like stuffed animal around the classroom and everybody tell a little part of the story. Well, for some reason they killed Barney 3 times. And I'm like, we couldn't understand. I was trying to like, hey guys, Barney's dead, leave him alone. They're like, no, Barney. You know, this guy comes up and hits Barney with a baseball bat in the head. I'm like, all right. So at the end of this, my niece and her friend, they walk us to out of the office. They walk us out, and I'm like, hey guys, what's the deal with Barney? And you know, and then her friend's like, oh, you know what happened, right? You know what happened? Well, Barney was on TV. And he thought that it was over. He thought the camera stopped rolling. He started walking away, and then he said a cuss word. So I guess the fourth graders, they don't like when Barney cusses. So they really went after him. They killed him 3 times. It was pretty horrible. But all right. So what we're gonna do right now? We're gonna have a little story slam competition. So first up, we're gonna have Sam Snow. He's a great storyteller. He was in the championships at the Metro. We're gonna have him tell a little piece of a story. So let me get a big round of applause for Sam Snow.
Make me hold this thing, all right? All right, hang on. So, ladies, gentlemen, neoconservative Republicans. All right, good. No good deed shall go unpunished, all right? That's what happens. What you do is, when your cousin graduates from high school, you DJ for her for free. You do that. While you're DJing for her for free, her father, your uncle, buys you a fuck ton of beer. You drink the beer, you play the Who, next thing you know, you're DJing your friend's birthday party. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's somewhere in Ohio. It's like Salem, Ohio, where there's a bunch of Klansmen and whatnot, but we found this like nice little pocket, and it's great. We have this flatbed truck, DJ rig set up, pumping music, wonderful. It's fantastic. Again, at this point, I don't know, it's like 95 degrees in the summer. 30 beers in a human being's body, things start to get a little fuzzy. You run out into the woods. This is what happens. You run out into the woods blind drunk because your friend Josh, okay, you need to tell him something. It's very important. You don't know what it is, but you need to find him and you run. You run out until you can't see the lights. You run until you can't see the people screaming. And what you don't realize is that these people, while you're gone, are all on ecstasy. So, in the middle of the woods, you realize I have to turn around because obviously Josh is not going to be in the middle of the woods. Back up a bit. When I first arrive at this gig, this guy is grilling up venison, and it's the most tender venison I've ever had in my life. It's beautiful. They're just putting a little bit of Italian dressing on it, and it's wonderful, succulent. Fucking taking it right off the grill, eating bites and bites of it. It's wonderful. Fast forward. I'm in the middle of the woods, turn around, run like hell, fly through the air because I hit a root and I slide for 15 feet. It's not mud, but it feels like mud. Now everyone's on ecstasy, there's a garage, and right on the corner of the garage is a mercury lamp. And there's a girl there, and she's kind of cute, and I'm kind of talking to her earlier before I run off looking for Josh, who is actually in California transporting meth.
We're gonna cut him off there. He's gonna come back up. Hold on a second. Alright, we're doing two bits of the story. Alright, so the next story. Let's get a round of applause for Sam real quick. Alright. The next story is my wife, Anima Nara Ruiz. She's from Mexico City. She's gonna tell another piece of a story. Let me get a round of applause for Indy.
Family, a person that goes away from the hometown. And that happened to my grandfather. He lived in a small town in Mexico. He has to move to the big city for something that happened. Okay, this is the deal. They were in a very small town, like very, very small town. And he's drinking, he's married, he's drinking with the friends and stuff. And then one tells him, like, hey man, I gotta tell you something. Well, this motherfucker, he's saying that he's fucking your wife. And my grandma is like, she was beautiful. My grandpa, like, got a beautiful girl. So he goes like, what? And he goes so totally crazy. He goes and finds my grandma and then start like kicking her, punching her, like beating her, like, how could you do this to me? How could you do this to me? And my grandma's like, I didn't do it. So he almost kills her. And then he realizes that she's saying the truth, okay? And he's like, oh, they hug, they kiss, and everything is forgotten. And then he realized also that the motherfucker was lying. He was fucking lying. So he goes and tries to find him, okay? He's going la, 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 around the town. And it's a harvest. Like, they do harvesting and stuff. So every single guy in the town has a machete. So he's running around like, and the other guy, he's fucked up. He's so fucked up, and he has a machete too. And then find each other, and they're like, I know what you did. And the other one is like, I don't fucking care. And then they go, oh, and they go and they start fighting, like, they start fighting.
Okay. Now, who do you want to hear? Who do you want to hear the rest of the story of? Anid or Sam?
Machete.
Let's hear it for Sam.
Round of applause.
All right. Let's hear it for Machete.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, you guys got to come tomorrow night, right down the street at Weeds. We're gonna have the story slam. We got Jim Gold gonna be our feature performer. Yeah, he's the most controversial author in the country. And anyways, that's it. So come hear the rest of Machete's story tomorrow, right? Thanks a lot. Just come.
Machete,
you.
We
gotta hear it.
You
gotta hear it.
Okay,
we'll make it back.
Woo!
Thank you.
So where are we? Oh yeah, we were like, yeah, they're fighting and all. And then the other guy, the mean dude, just like flashed my grandpa's shoulder, and he was like, oh, and he sees his own blood, like, oh, and rage, like in the movie. And they grab the machete and boom. And yeah, the other guy loses his head, literally. My grandpa just killed the other guy, and he has to move to the city, and he couldn't come back. That's the story.
That was a little long. Very happy to introduce our next reader, who is Greg Purcell. He lives in New York City, where he coordinates the St. Mark's Bookshop reading series at Solo's Bar. If you're ever there, check out noslander.com. Find out when and where you can check it out. He has worked recently appearing in Fence Magazine and the Boob City Reader. Everyone give a warm welcome to Greg Purcell.
Thanks for coming. I like the story about the machete. That was pretty good, I think. I'm just gonna read some poems. Feeling pretty good about this. Did everyone find the hideout okay? How many people from out of town? Is all of them from out of town? Everyone's from kind of in town, right?
We have
so everyone knows it. Hi, guys. Jersey. All right, let's do this. All right, I wrote this. I wrote this after seeing the John Adams television show. Bonfires and illuminations, the whole shoe and nothing more. Across this continent, other continents, flywheels and paper disasters flown against the pavement, film and pixel, this deep-seeming wizards with bottle rocket hands, things transforming to cinematic white hood, lizards into men, women into golems, chainsaws linked to murders, the human cuts of flesh like hocks of beef, soda pop and cigarettes. And though it kills us, we like to watch. One imagines in the dust receding just a lawyer, easily bored, literate, reduced to his farm and wigless and formal. How responsible if not entertained? How legal if not transformed? Scowling, he rejects even the formal portraits which plane and ball him in oil light, and with his cane taps out indignities. Here, this did not happen, and this, this is false, and here, and this, and that. You don't have to clap. You don't have to clap for that. I mean, you might feel as if you wanted to, but you don't. You don't have to. We can do this one of two ways. You can sit silently and pretend as if you were having a, you know, some sort of revelatory experience, or you can, you know, have a night out. And either way, I'm going to do what I can to make that even happen for you. So good. Okay. I wrote this for an artist named Sebrin Verstag. We both moved to New York. We're both from Chicago. Chicago was a fort before it came under attack from the city boosters. Bigger than Sullivan, bigger than Song, and any wine you might have crushed from the prairie flora will suffice. You can stand in Grant Park and get drunk on it, howl at the lake when it's frozen, as if you were new to wine and didn't know it came from such an exotic people as the French. Lord, did you see that girl with the shirt like a fabric cross? Or that man held upright like a stack of old Reichsmarks? It's difficult to think here and not to bury your head in old work. We tried to write a play this month, Jay and I, but the play exploded. Just as New York crumbles into a fine white powder or three new practicable words leading into dark forests whenever you try to touch it. New York has everything. That's why we came here. Yet everything, as you know, includes the vast horse-shitting business of outer space and the weird flywheel push-button thing at its center upon which we sit edgewise, having reached the roiling termination of the economic world. In New York, one does not move side to side or backwards. One is pushed ever onwards towards Mars or the future. Very soon we will be rich. I never thought this way back home. Reading the approval matrix in New York Magazine and finding your name there, stamped among the brilliance, gave me some kind of thrill, as if Chicago had pulled itself out of the ground and come to New York and thought it was a hard-backed sofa, and sat down in it, deciding between reading the Post or the Chicago Sun-Times, and only we could see the skyline's new elevation.
That was good.
Oh, you like that? Thank you. I've got much more facile stuff coming. I wrote a bunch of poems alternately to a figure, one figure named Buddy and another one named Dummy. At the time, I think Buddy, who was a sort of a weird, like a weird sexual surrogate, was a Michelle Obama, and Dummy was, of course, any number of Bushes. But that's changed. Buddy can be Buddy now. Buddy is sort of a very cute girl who works on a yacht. And Dummy maybe is Timothy Geithner. I'm not sure. Where will I begin? Buddy Buddy, constant work makes us boring. We're still ourselves at rest. Your arms are tawny and mine are thick. We set high above our heads the same crumbling fine work of favored centuries, which are books, which are not ours, and this is not our century. That peculiar strength makes us boring, buddy. Your brown legs scissoring through the stacks, this thin, short, exposed beneath your skirts, mine adrift beneath my dingy torso, wrapped ahead like lunch, employable. What's to be done when they're weak, friend, all gouted and we're rolled in wheelchairs? Entwine them while we can and breathe? Not in the workplace, buddy. Not reminded for decades of the dull basic thing. You may get tawnier yet, I may get rounder. Weakness may yet have its substitute. Play music that's kind of dumb, that screams, let the new century go. For dummy. It is gray, green, and cute, and slash unbuttoned. That's vampire flesh, stupid. It jabs, however, in blobs. It is transparent, absorptive. I once owned it as if it were money, loved it furiously, and spent it while it gashed and spewed forth utterance like claws and tickling. Dummy, it clacked as all searchers clack above the drawbridge. Fright forgivable, unmask it all. I saw you upon the batwing, John. Quiver me do.
Woo!
For Buddy. You help me, I will not help you. We have four ladders in the store, unfit for my weight, and when they fold beneath me like an origami crane, there will be a lasting satisfaction, buddy, and heat in your elderly womb. The one who liked the machete, Miss Machete liked that. Thank you. There my skull, there's more of that poem. There my skull will grow all soft, and new ladders ascending to heaven will wobble horribly before us. They will slip me up off the floor, and we will both of us have some use for this particular angled body.
Two more?
One more?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to read. I could read something good, but I'm going to read something that I wrote for Blossom Deary instead. It's the first thing I've written in a long time, and it's for Blossom Deary, and it's also called On the New Poetry. Kind of stupid, right? But I'm going to do it anyway. On the new poetry for Blossom Deary. It must be stupid. It must benefit our friends and benefactors in the least offensive way. It must close ranks on the unknown. It must switch to merely geologic time, which may be too much. It must know that to be attentive is to kill. It must know that a gimmick is as fine as any shape. It must know that the video game BioShock is better because it is lurid and can be judged by its mechanics. It must know that the animals will die with us. It must know good wine like Clayton Eshelman, not at all. It must know that ineffectual anger follows the time. It must use heightened poetic diction even among mixed company, for heightened diction displays that idiocy which connects us to the common animal life. For the animals know their heightened diction and are the stupidest on earth. It must always be humorous except when inappropriate. If money is a form of poetry, then so is Detroit. It must cause a ruckus at dinner, not at all. It must be critical only for the amusement of the party or else violently active. For now we must live in geologic time and it bores us. For money in geologic time is not abstract. It must be both more and less boring than geologic time. It must know that this is impossible. For to be boring is a kindness. For to be exciting is ethical. For impossibility fumigates manful intelligence. For the elderly avant-garde are the smartest. For the elderly avant-garde are the great exemplars of capitalism. For the elderly avant-garde pose in contradistinctive suits, yet the great contradistinction is to be naked and elderly and avant-garde, which is a fact counter to learning and grotesque as any poem. For if an old dog is nice, we protect it with our lives. For if an old dog is mean, we put it down without sentiment. For stripes are basic and should be worn. It must sing songs and master suicide. It must be ashamed to teach. It must know the lyrics. It must know Bob Dylan's lyrics barely. For the larger post-structuralist critique of authorship and the humanist subject frightens no one and is not a lyric. For it must know Donald Fagen's lyrics and the lyrics of Bo Diddley. For it must know the lyrics of MC Light and Apollinaire. For it must know that Patti Smith's best work was with Blue Oyster Cult. For Blossom Deary was a great poet. Thank you.
Our next reader is Caroline Picard, and after Caroline, we're gonna have a short break. So, kind of mind, and then followed by the rest of the readers. Caroline Picard is the founding director of the Green Lantern Gallery and Press, co-editor for the literary podcast The Parlor. Her writing has been published in a handful of publications, including the Philadelphia Independent, New City, Lumpen, Area Chicago, the Chicago Alternative Review, and Proximity Magazine. She has just finished her first novel, Bygones, and has begun work on a second book, Happy Ending.